Slightly later, I managed a Yud Beis Tishri Tofshin Ein Ches, Rabbi Shua Avrom Yeshaya Goldman.
Just a couple of days ago, we finished, not even 2 days since we finished Yom Kippur, and the Yom Meiram ended. And we now enter the days leading up to Sukkot, Zman Simchaseinu, a time where we rejoice, where the pressure, so to speak, of the Yom Meiram has been lifted slightly, and we move forward into the joyous Yom Tov of Sukkot. Teshuvah that we do in the Yom Meiram is more a teshuvah of Yira. In Elul we prepare with Selichas and we come to Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, and it's a teshuvah which comes sort of from a Yira, from a Emas Hadin. And as we go into Sukkah, the Sfarim say, is to do with the teshuvah Me'ava. Although we've done till now, we've done teshuvah Me'ira, teshuvah out of the fear of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Ema. Now we go to Sukkot, and Sukkot is a time when we do teshuvah, we come close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu out of Ava, out of love. And we know that there's a different level between somebody who does teshuvah out of fear of HaKadosh Baruch Hu and somebody who does teshuvah out of love for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Teshuvah which is done out of Yira, then a person out of fear of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, his zedoinos or naaseh kishkagos, his averus which he might have done willfully, are now turned into averus, a much lesser madrega of avera, of just, it was done by accident, as if it was a shogeg. But someone who does teshuvah me'ava out of love for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, his averus on nasek mitzvahs, it's as if he did a mitzvah. How that works is a drasha for itself. But on Sukkot, when we say that we do teshuvah me'ava, it would appear that on Sukkot, by rejoicing on Sukkot, we can reach madrigas which are even higher than the madrigas we reached on Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur. And how can it be? How can it be that on the Yom Tov of Sukkot we can reach a place which we never reached on Rosh Hashanah and on Yom Kippur? So we need to examine a little bit the mitzvah of Sukkah, the mitzvah where we're commanded to go out from a diras keva, from a fixed dwelling place, into a diras arai, into our huts in the garden, or at least to the colder part of the dining room where the roof's open, and we have to go out from our usual comfort zone. One of the reasons given for this is that if Chas v'Shalom, the Ribbono Shel Olam was goyzer on Klal Yisrael, Ribbono Shel Olam saw fit that Klal Yisrael have to go into Golos, and it was sealed on Yom Kippur, then by going out from our comfortable homes into the less comfortable Sukkah, then we can tick that box of Golos that the Ribbono Shel Olam created for us. If the Ribbono Shel Olam says we have to go to Golos, that can be achieved just by going into the Sukkah. And in fact, it's the Yalkut Shemoni which says it Mefurosh, says very clearly, the Yalkut says, Omer Rebbe Eliezer ben Moros, Rebbe Eliezer ben Moros says, Lama Ono Oisin Sukkah Acha Yom Kippurim, why do we make Sukkah straight after Yom Kippur? Should be a bit of a break, it's very lachatznik a few days to get everything ready in time. She says, Atam Moitzi, Barosh Hashanah, Yoshiv HaKadosh Baruch Hu B'din Al Boya Olam. The Ribbono Shel Olam sits in Din, on Kol Boya Olam, everybody in the world is judged in Rosh Hashanah, and the Din is sealed of Yom HaKippurim, Chosin Es HaDin, Ribbono Shel Olam seals the Din, and everything is finalized. Shema Yotze Dinah Yishel Yisrael, the Golos, it could be that Klal Yisrael, Chas V'Shalom, had to go into Golos, then Validekein Oysin Sukkah, they have a way out. The Ribbono Shel Olam gives them a way out, the back door. You go into the Sukkah. Goylin mi batein the Sukkah. You go out from your house into the Sukkah. V'akadosh Baruch Hu ma'ale aleihen. The Ribbono Shel Olam reckons it as if you're going into Bavel. That's what the Yalkut Shmoni says. That it's as if you're going into a Golos of Bavel. So if that's the case, that a Sukkah is representing a Golos, how is it possible that we have a certain din which is found only by Sukkah, which is called a mitzta'ez potter min ha-sukkah? Somebody who isn't feeling good in the Sukkah doesn't have to go to the Sukkah. And it's a din we only find by none of the other mitzvahs in the Torah. Just by Sukkah, we find that a mitzta'ez, somebody who is difficult for him, does not have to go into the Sukkah. And we're not talking about somebody who, Chas v'Shalom, is seriously ill, somebody who finds it really difficult or suffers from the cold or anything like that. Even if it's too hot for him in the Sukkah, which won't be in England, but in other places in the world, if it's too hot for him, if he's bothered by the wasps or the mosquitoes, then a person does not have to sit in the Sukkah, he's potter from sitting in the Sukkah. Imagine being in Bavel and telling Nebuchadnezzar, I'm sorry, the mosquitoes over here in Bavel bother me, send me back to Eretz Yisrael. That wouldn't work. Yet, by sitting in the Sukkah, which is supposed to be a Golos, we are still allowed to go back out of our house, and we go back, we're out of our sukkah and back into our house, and the Rebbeinu Shalom reckons it as if we've done our golus and we've been yotze our golus already. How can it possibly be such a thing? Not only that, but it's a mitzvah. When Reb Chaim Moshe Kujinski, there's a well-known story of Reb Chaim Moshe Kujinski. He was once feeling ill on sukkahs, and as is the minhag to visit Rabbanim on sukkahs, somebody came to visit Reb Chaim Moshe Kujinski on sukkahs, and he saw that Reb Chaim Moshe wasn't feeling well. So Reb Chaim Moshe told him, "I'm sorry, I can't be mekabel you here in the sukkah, so you'll have to excuse me, but please be my guest and go down into the sukkah and have something to eat there, make a bracha there, have something to eat." And he explained to the Bnei Bayis that I can't be yotze the mitzvah of sukkah because I'm a mitztayeh, I'm not well, and therefore I can't be yotze the mitzvah of sukkah. However, I still have a mitzvah of achnasas orchim. I'm not potter just because I'm not feeling well of achnasas orchim. So therefore, I've asked my guests to go to the sukkah and eat. So it's a very interesting thing that why by sukkah? Why, because it's a golus, are you potter just because of a mitztayeh in a sukkah? So one has to understand as well what is behind the mitzvah of sukkah, a little bit. So the Torah in Orachayim, Simon Tov Reish Chof Hei, speaks about the mitzvah of sukkah, and he gives an explanation as well. He gives the reason for the mitzvah of sukkah, as we know, is Leman Yedu Doi Reseichem, Kibbe Sukkah Seshav Yes Bnei Yisrael B'Tzio Yisrael Yisrael Mitzrayim. Klal Yisrael have to go and sit in the sukkah in order that we should remember and know and pass on that HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out of Mitzrayim, and when he took us out of Mitzrayim, he sat us in sukkahs. Whether these were sukkahs, mamish, actual sukkahs, actual huts, or whether these were the Anani HaKavod, it's no different. But the Pasuk also mentions the Osis and the Mosim, the wondrous miracles HaKadosh Baruch Hu did for us when we came out of Mitzrayim. And because of that, says the Torah Shulchan Aruch, this is why we sit in a sukkah. And the Be'er Yosef asks on the Torah is a halacha sefer. In halacha, it's usually concise, it's quite clear and concise, because we need to know clear, cut, what is the halacha. And the Torah is not into usually explaining the Tamei HaMitzvahs, the reasons behind the mitzvahs. There's other sefarim which explain the Tamei HaMitzvahs. And the Be'er Yosef asks, why does the Torah explain the mitzvah of sukkah? Why dafka by sukkah is the Torah going in to explain? And he answers that when we look in the Pasuk in Vayikra about the mitzvah of sukkah, the actual mitzvah is connected with this Tamei HaMitzvah, the man Yedu Doi Reseichem. And therefore, it's not pshat that the Torah is explaining the mitzvah of sukkah. This is an integral part of the mitzvah. Indeed, we paskin that if you do not have the kavanah, but usually we paskin mitzvahs in the shrichas kavanah. You do not necessarily have to have kavanahs when it comes to most mitzvahs. You still yotze in the mitzvah. However, by sukkah, we are mechayev a person. If he does not have the kavanah of a mitzvah, then he cannot. He's not yotze the mitzvah of sukkah. He needs to have kavanah when he goes and sits in the sukkah, that he's sitting in the sukkah leman yedu dei reseifem, because this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu did for us when we came out of Mitzrayim. So the Be'er Yosef explains that it's not the Torah explaining the reason of the mitzvah. This is part of the mitzvah. We build the sukkah, we sit in the sukkah, and we know that it's because of the man Yedu Doi Reseichem. So why is it so important, why is it so necessary to know that the man Yedu Doi Reseichem, that because HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out of Mitzrayim and sat us in sukkahs, why is it so important? Why can't it be like, why is it not like other mitzvahs in the Torah, where we can be mekayim the mitzvah, and if we have kavanah, very well and good, that's a much higher madriga. But if we weren't mekayim, if we didn't have the kavanah, then we're still mekayim the mitzvah. Why do we have to have the kavanah dafka by sukkahs? So Shlomo Levenstein explains that it's... Sorry?
For everything you have to have kavanah.
Yes, but if you didn't have the kavanah, you could still be yotze in the mitzvah. It's by sukkah, so you have to have, you're only yotze if you have the kavanah on the first day. So Rosh Hashanah Levenstein explains that the man Yedu Doi Reseichem, this integral part of the mitzvah, is speaking, going back to those years where we left Mitzrayim. Klal Yisrael were a young nation. Klal Yisrael weren't even yet, hadn't received the Torah. They were on the Memtesh Shari Tumah. They were on a very, very low level. And in fact, that is when Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu, this is Bnei Bechor Yisrael, this is my beloved firstborn Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael is, this is my beautiful, beautiful nation. Although nobody else could see the beauty in Klal Yisrael at the time. Halaloi de Avodah Zarah, Halaloi de Avodah Zarah. They're both serving Avodah Zarah. And Klal Yisrael didn't look very good on the Memtesh Shari Tumah. But yet, that's when HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out. And that's when we say in Rosh Hashanah, we remind HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Lechtech Acharei Bamidbar, Beres Lezeruah, Rebbeinu Shlomo remembers the love that he had for us when he took us out of Mitzrayim, even though we didn't look very pretty. And we went for 40 years in the Midbar. Now we have to understand, when we think a little bit, a Midbar is not a very exciting place. It's a desert where you have boiling hot heat during the day, freezing cold temperatures at night. There's no corner shops, there's nowhere to buy food from, there's no local conveniences, there's no ready water source anywhere, and there's certainly no place where there's lots of vegetation growing that people have what to eat. And the terrain is also very rough, and yet HaKadosh Baruch Hu took a nation, a massive, massive nation, out into the Midbar. And first of all, the water that was necessary. Water is absolutely necessary for survival. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu provided water through the Be'er of Miriam. And the way the Be'er of Miriam would work, at every encampment that they came to, they would stop. Every Rosh of the Shevet, every Nasi from the Shevet would go over to the Be'er of Miriam, and they would draw a line with their stick in the sand, which would surround all of their Shevet, and the water would pour forth. It wasn't just Peshat, everyone came across to the Be'er, to this well with their bucket or their cup, and brought water for the family. We're talking about that the Rosh of the tribe would go around, draw this line with a stick, and then water would pour forth, so much so, say the Mefarshim, that if somebody wanted to travel from one Shevet to another Shevet, there would be a river they would have to cross in order to be able to get to the other Shevet. There was such an abundance of water able to supply the entire encampment of Klal Yisrael for all the necessities that they needed water for. Then food. To understand what food meant in the Midbar, one needs to understand the logistics of to provide food for so many people, how many people there actually were there. We band around the number that we see in the Torah of 600,550. That's the numbers that we think of when we think of the encampment of Klal Yisrael. Rav Zalman Sirotkin says that somebody once came over to Hishver, and Rav Eliezer tells her, and asked him, you know, he understands the Torah very, very well. You know, I understand everything that's written in the Torah, 600,000 people, I can imagine, come out Mitzrayim. But he goes, the Mefarshim that speak about the tremendous millions of people that were in the encampment of Klal Yisrael, I don't accept that. It's a bit too difficult to believe. So the Rav Zalman Sirotkin's father-in-law, Rabbi Eliezer Tarza, explained to him that if you think about it for a moment, the ladies in Mitzrayim gave birth to Shisha Bekeres Echot. Every mother gave birth to six at once. Sorry? Besides the Levium. But all of Klal Yisrael, 600,000. The numbers that were mentioned in the Torah, 600,000, were just the men between the ages of 20 to 60. So if you count the people below that, below 20, and you count the men above 60, you'd probably have to at least double that number at minimum. And then, so you come out with 1.2 million, almost 1.3 million it comes out to be. And then if you count the Bechorim, the amount of Bechorim that there were from each Mishpacha, there was 22,273 Bechorim in Klal Yisrael. That means that there were that many Mishpachas in Klal Yisrael. There was 22,273 Mishpachas in Klal Yisrael. If you divide that number of 1.3 million between the 22,000, it works out on average, every family had about 54 people minimum. 54 people in the family, and assuming that women didn't give birth one at a time, 54 pregnancies, they probably didn't go through 54 ladies. I'm sure there's no one who went through 54 ladies. So it must be, you work it out, it's Shisha Bekeres Echot, as Chazal say. And then you have to take into account, says Rav Zalman Sirotkin, that 4/5 of Klal Yisrael died in Mitzrayim. That was only above the age of 20. HaKadosh Baruch doesn't punish below the age of 20. That was only above the age of 20. You still had all these other children who were born from the years before, before the last year of the plagues in Mitzrayim, before these other 4/5 were wiped out. So you had below the age of 20 families of at least 54 children who were Yisoimim now. And where did they go? So the Chazal say they were divided between the other Mishpachas of Klal Yisrael, between the other Mishpachas. It works out that every family in the Midbar was about 250 people strong minimum. So you're talking about every single family in the Midbar had an entire Moisad to look after. Now, I look after a Moisad which is a lot smaller than that, and it's a headache sometimes. But the logistics of looking after a single family unit of 250 people, the pictures that we get when our children bring home from school with the tents and Klal Yisrael nicely camped around the Mishkan doesn't exist. It must have gone on and stretched for miles and miles and miles. Anyone who's been in Eretz Yisrael knows every morning that the angel lorries rock up 5 o'clock in the morning, wake you up, and the Tnuva lorries rock up outside the Makolot with their bags of milk. In the Midbar, it would have necessitated for every single family to have a couple of lorries rocking up outside their house with the bread, with the milk products, just for breakfast, never mind lunch and supper. So what did Rabbeinu Shlomo do in his chasadim? He provided Klal Yisrael with a mon. The mon was provided, and that arrived at everybody's doorstep, and the mothers were able to provide for their moysad. They were able to provide mon for every single person. There's another problem as well. Every child likes a different food. No one's going to be happy with one thing that his mother makes for supper. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu sorted that out as well, by every child could have whatever he wanted on that day. There would be no arguing among the 250 siblings what they would be having for supper. Everyone would get whatever they wanted. And then you have the weather and the temperature in the Midbar. As we said, it's a boiling, boiling hot day. It's a freezing, freezing cold night. How were Klal Yisrael supposed to survive in such terrible, terrible conditions? And HaKadosh Baruch Hu provided for them the Anani HaKovid. There were 7 Anani HaKovid in total. There was one in front of Klal Yisrael, one behind Klal Yisrael, and then surrounding them on all 4 sides, which comes to 6. Those clouds provided the temperature, air conditioning, central air conditioning for Klal Yisrael, kept them perfectly at the right temperature. And they also, Chazal tell us, it washed their clothes, it refreshed them, and their clothes never needed actual laundering because the clouds made their clothes fresh. And the 7th cloud would go in front of Klal Yisrael and it would flatten the terrain, so it would be very nice and easy to walk. So much so that we know by the Emirim wanted to wipe out Klal Yisrael, and they hid in Nachal Arnon. They hid in the mountains above where Klal Yisrael were going to walk past, and they wanted to ambush them as they walked through the valley. And the Rebbeinu Shlomo made the 2 mountains move together, and the Emirim were killed. And Klal Yisrael would never have known about this, except that there were 2 Mitzrayim, there were 2 people who were suffering from Tsaras, who were outside the encampment, and they were following behind the Anani HaKavod, and they saw in the river all these bones and blood that were from the crushed Emirim, and they told Klal Yisrael about the Nes that HaKadosh Baruch Hu had made for them. So this is what was going on in the Midbar, and this is what we're mechuyav to remember when it comes to Sukkos. When it comes to Sukkos, we have to remember how it was in the lap of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out of Mitzrayim, everything was absolutely perfect. Everything was as good as it could be. We had absolutely everything provided for us. Comfortable air conditioning, comfortable conditions. There was no stress or sorrow whatsoever. Although, when we look at the complaints that went on, we might not think so. But there was nothing, it was absolutely perfect. There couldn't have been better conditions for us when we were with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Midbar. And that's why, when we come back to Sukkos, Leman Yedid HaYosechem, we have to remember what it was like being comfortable in HaKadosh Baruch Hu's lap. And therefore, if you're mitztaeh, you can't be mekayim in the midst of Sukkah properly. If you're bothered by the flies, there were no flies in the Midbar. HaKadosh Baruch Hu ensured that all the animals, the snakes and scorpions, were destroyed. The food was absolutely perfect. If things are too uncomfortable for you, then you can't sit in the sukkah, because that is not Leman Yedid HaYosechem. You won't remember what it was like to come out of Mitzrayim. You have to be comfortable, and that's why there's a patur for somebody who's not feeling well, who's not feeling good, who's not feeling, simply not feeling comfortable, not to have to sit in the sukkah, because it's not how it was when we came out of Mitzrayim. And then when we realize and we're explaining about this, how comfortable it was with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's why we come to our original question was, how can we do teshuva, why is Sukkah a time of teshuva me'ava, teshuva of love to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? When we realize how much HaKadosh Baruch Hu did for us in the Midbar, how close we were to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then we can understand Hashem loves us so much that we love Hashem back, and we have this feeling on Sukkot of being very close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a certain feeling of happiness which pervades our homes, and that feeling is when we do Teshuva Me'av, we Mekai in the mitzvah of Sukkah, and that's what brings us close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's why on Sukkah we can reach that high level of Teshuva Me'av. The Sukkot is also known as Zaman Simchaseinu. It's known as a time of every Yom Tov has a chiyuv to be misameach on Yom Tov. However, Sukkos is called Zaman Simchaseinu, more than all the other Yom Tovim. The question is, if it is supposed to be Zaman Simchaseinu, why does HaKadosh Baruch Hu ask us to leave our comfortable homes and go out into an uncomfortable sukkah, have rain perhaps dripping down our necks, sitting under a thin sheet of schach under the open air? Why does that bring simcha? Why, if it's Zaman Simchaseinu, and Zaman Simchaseinu is such an integral part of the Yom Tov, do we have to go out and sit into our sukkah? Surely, it would be a lot easier to rejoice with the Yom Tov by sitting in our comfortable houses and rejoicing with good food and drink, and that way we'll be able to enjoy Simcha a lot better. Why is it that we have to go out into the sukkah? And there's something else which is interesting about sukkahs. is in the times of the Beis HaMikdash, there was a special korban, apart from the usual korbanos which were brought on Sukkos, there was an extra avoda of nisuch hamayim, of bringing simple H2O, bringing simple water to the Mizbeach, and pouring water by the Mizbeach, and that would necessitate a great outpouring of rejoicing. It would happen that the simple space She'eva went around this nisuch hamayim, and the Gemara says, somebody who has never seen the simple space She'eva in the Beis HaMikdash, has never seen a simcha in his life. So what was it about this simple pouring of water? There were so many korbanos brought on the Mizbeach, so many more expensive korbanos. Why was it just this simple pouring of water on the Mizbeach that brought such an outpouring of joy, where the Tanoim and the Tzaddikim would dance and juggle, they would lead the dancing? Why was it like that? So, someone once asked Rav Dessler, why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu make such a difficult world, an unhappy world? So difficult to find people who are genuinely happy. Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu make such an unhappy world? So Rav Dessler answered him and he said, the emissaries HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a very happy world, a world which is only happiness. But the problem is, Akina v'atava v'hakovid mitzien esa adam min ha'olam. That kina, taiva, and kovid remove a person from the world. Now, we know there's plenty of people who suffer with kina, taiva, and kovid, and they're living. So what does it mean, mitzien esa adam min ha'olam? Says Rav Dessler, removes a person from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's world, from HaKadosh Baruch Hu's perfect world, because we suffer from jealousy, taiva, and kovid, that moves us into an unhappy world. If we didn't have those negative traits of kina, taiva, and kovid, then we would have no problem being in the beautiful, happy world that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created. And the Ochas Chaim Lerosh says that Rosh Kol Devarim Lishmar Einav Midavah She'ina Shaloi. A person, the first thing a person has to do to move forward in life is to remove himself from looking at what doesn't belong to him. Nobody's jealous of the Queen living in Buckingham Palace, because everybody knows that Buckingham Palace is not an attainable asset. Nobody could possibly buy Buckingham Palace. So therefore we're not jealous of the royal family who live in Buckingham Palace. But when there are certain things which we think are attainable, we become jealous and we feel that maybe I should have got that, or somebody took that away from me. I could have done that business deal. I could have got that, or whatever it was. And everyone in their own way, we feel that perhaps somebody's taken something away from us. Says Rosh Hashanah, it's not possible. The Ribbono Shel Olam will only give to a person what's meant for him, and it's impossible for anybody else to take away from this person something which isn't his. Therefore, to move forward, the person has to remove himself from looking at things which don't belong to him, and he'll be able to move forward. And there's a pasuk in Mishlei as well which says, that a happy, healthy life comes from a healthy heart, or a kavat somis kina, and the bones rot away from kina, from jealousy. That means, in order to live a good, happy life, a person has to have a healthy heart pumping around his body, and the only way to have that, to stop the body rotting, is by not being jealous of others. And the idea as well, even in the medical world today, we know that heart diseases come from stress and anxiety, and a lot of stress comes from worrying about what we don't have, and because of that, it gives us a feeling of perhaps that our hearts are not so healthy. And the Chasam Sofer says that if somebody sees a tzaddik, v'raloi, a tzaddik, but never, things are not going so good for him, you hear, he complains about this, and he's not doing so well, and you see, then you should know he's a tzaddik ben Rasha. And if you see a Rasha, v'tovlo, you see a Rasha, a wicked person, but everything's always good, he's always happy, he's always satisfied with what he has, then you should know he's a Rasha ben tzaddik. And the question is, how could it be? How could you have a tzaddik? It doesn't make sense. It's an oxymoron. A tzaddik v'raloi. A tzaddik that things are not going good for him. A tzaddik, everything's perfect. So how can the Chasam Sofer say he's a tzaddik ben Rasha? So the Chasam Sofer explains that when you have a tzaddik, and things should be going very well for him, even though he's a tzaddik now, but if he's been brought up in the home of a Rasha, he's been brought up in the home where nothing's good, everything's not good enough, he's not satisfied with what he has, he always needs more, then it can automatically have an effect on his later life. Even though he becomes a tzaddik, it could still be v'raloi, he's still not got totally out of the chinuch that he was brought up with, never to be satisfied with what you've got. And if you have a Rasha, the Tovloi, a Rasha, and things are going well for him, then you should know that the only reason things are going well for him, he's happy with what he's got, is because he was brought up in the home of a tzaddik. He was brought up in a home where it was Sameach b'chelkoi. They were happy with what they had, and that's why that also rubbed off into, even though he's become a Rasha now, since he's brought up in a home where everything was satisfied with what they had, that's why he's now Rasha v'tovloi. In Keheles, what we learn on Sukkos, Shlomo Melech says in Keheles, Re'isias kol omo v'chol kishrin amasa v'hu kinas isha re'eyu. I have seen all the work that people put into whatever they do, and all the thought that goes behind whatever people work at is kinas isha re'eyu, is jealousy one man to another. V'gam zeh ha'koil hovel, and all this is also a waste of time. So, a person, if he didn't have jealousy from his friends, if he weren't worried about what Yana had, then nothing would happen. The world is only fueled because we're always looking, says Shlomo HaMelech, at what everyone else has. And Ephraim Waxman explains with a moshav, for example, when people go to a holiday house, then they're very happy to do without the conveniences of two sinks, they're very happy to do without the conveniences of two dishwashers, or all the usual luxuries which we used to when we're at home the rest of the year. And that is, as long as nobody else on the same, as he puts in the bungalow colony, is living in the same type of house that they're living in. As soon as somebody in the holiday area gets a house with two sinks, two dishwashers, and all the usual luxuries, then suddenly, on holiday as well, things will suddenly change. Because this is kinas isha re'eyu. If you ask a person, is it better for a child to be partially blind or to be hard of hearing? They'll tell you, it's much worse for a child to be blind. For a child blind, he can't see, it's terrible. Yet, when we see a child with glasses, we don't blink an eyelid. It's normal, because everybody wears glasses. When you see a child with hearing aids, it's hard of hearing. It's nebuch, because not everybody's wearing hearing aids. So it's all kinas isha re'eyu, it all depends how the world looks around to everybody else. And says the Mesidus Yesharim, if it wouldn't be for this kinas isha re'eyu, a person would be satisfied with just a crust of bread and a roof over his head. The Vilna Gaon pravad golus, not just by going out into the sukkah, did that as well, but he also used to go around during the year, and he would go to a golus where he wasn't known, and he would pravad golus, and he would go to places, he'd sit in the Beis HaMedrash and learn, and rely on the kindness of the Yidden around him for food and for the basics that he would need. And one day he said that was one time that he felt true feelings of jealousy. He was sitting in the Beis HaMedrash, and he was invited by a blind man. There was a blind man in the Beis HaMedrash, heard somebody learning, didn't know it was the Vilna Gaon. And he came over to him and he invited him, please come to my house for a meal. The Vilna Gaon could see this person was extremely poor, and he felt bad to impose on this person. But the man insisted, so he came home with the man, and he came into the house, and he realized he wasn't the only guest. There was a whole table full of guests there. And the meal was obviously a simple meal, but he heard the man was being mishabeach his wife about the delicious food that she made. And the wife was explaining to her husband with such simcha how she created the food. She said, I went to work in the Shechita house, and in the Shechita house they gave me the leftover heads and feet of the chicken. Nobody wanted the heads and feet of the chicken which had been shechted. So I brought them home, and we made a delicious meat meal with it. And the bread, you want to know where I got the bread from? I went to the miller, and I asked the miller, do you mind if I scrape off the flour which is stuck to the wall when he was grinding the wheat? And the flour which is stuck to the wall, she scraped off the wall, and we have a meal, we have bread like the Shenz de Balabos in town. Said the Vilna Gaon, he felt such strong feelings of jealousy of how people can be so sameach bechelkom. People are so happy with what they had. Those were true feelings of jealousy. And the Meshech Chochma says that when a person is born, HaKadosh Baruch Hu provides him with all his needs. A mother is able to feed a child, and we're given whatever we need, whatever's necessary, we're given for free. Air, water is almost free. You can always get it, usually for free. And things which are luxuries, one needs to work more on. One needs to try and work harder to get them. Sukkot is a time, it's a mitzvah where we're mechuyav in leman yedudei reseichem, to remember, to have kavana that everything comes from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When a person realizes and understands that there's nothing that he can actually do, there's nothing that he can actually miss out on, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is providing for him, like he provided during the times when we came out of Mitzrayim, then that brings a person to a true simcha, a true level of simcha. So that's why HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells us, Sukkot is dafka, zaman simchaseinu, dafka when we go out of our usual materialism, we go out from our usual time where we enjoy our houses, when we enjoy our luxuries that we work for, and that we feel we've earned, And we go and we sit in a sukkah like every other yid in the world. Everyone goes and sits in their sukkah, and everyone sits under the shamayim, the same type of sechach, and we sit there and we remember that it's only HaKadosh Baruch Hu provides for everything. And when we realize, just like L'man Yedidu Yoseichim, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out of Mitzrayim, He provided for all our needs. When we're sitting in the sukkah, we realize that as well, and that brings an epiphany, that brings a realization that the whole way through the year, all my work and everything that we're doing is not really me. It's really HaKadosh Baruch Hu looking after us. And that brings us to a level of simcha, which is true simcha. And if we think of people that we know who are genuinely happy people, it's probably people who are not necessarily successful in the usual term of the word, but people who are mustapik b'mo'ot, people who are happy with little and very happy with what they have. Those are the genuinely, usually we see the genuinely happy people in the world. And that gives us that epiphany when we sit in the sukkah, under the sukkah, and we remember HaKadosh Baruch Hu provides for us. That gives us a feeling of true simcha. And through that's how we truly realize the enjoyment of Yom Tov without having to worry about the luxuries that we're used to during the rest of the year. So one of the leading Tanoim who would lead the dancing by the Simchas Beis HaSheva was Hillel HaZaken. Hillel HaZaken was known as one of the most humble of people. He had time for every single yid. He was, and even not every single yid. He was the one who, when the ger came to Shammai and wanted to learn the whole Torah on one foot, Shammai sent him away, and Hillel taught him. Hillel had patience. The Gemara tells us a story as well on Erev Shabbos when somebody had a bet whether they could get Hillel angry or not, and he came to Hillel when he was getting ready for Shabbos, and Erev Shabbos is a stressful time, and not once did Hillel get angry with him. And Hillel, when he came to the Simchas Beis HaSheva, he would say, it says the Gemara in Sukkot Nun Aleph Amud Aleph, I think it is Nun Aleph Amud Aleph, that he would say, "Im ani kan, hakol kan. If I am here, then everybody's here. Im ein ani kan, mi kan. If I'm not here, then who's here?" And on the surface of things, it looks like a sense of vanity. One of the Rockefellers apparently used to not walk around with a watch. He never used to wear a watch because he knew he didn't need to be on time for meetings because the meeting wasn't going to start without him. So he knew everyone had to rely on him. There's no necessity for him to wear a watch. So on the surface of things, it would appear that Hillel has this sense of, if I'm here, then everyone's here. If I'm not here, then who's here? Nothing else matters. But of course, it couldn't have been like that since Hillel was such a humble person. So some explain that Hillel was referring to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That Hillel was referring to that if HaKadosh Baruch Hu is here, then everyone's here. If HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not here, then there's no point. But the Sefer HaFlah, the Frankfurter Rav, explains in a different way. Hillel was addressing the many people that were Oyle Regel for Sukkahs. Every Yid in Klal Yisrael had a chiyuv to come up to HaKadosh Baruch Hu on the Shalosh Regalim. And in Sukkot, people were coming up after Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur with a feeling of inadequacy, of a feeling where they see people doing a serious avodah, but they themselves don't feel like they've achieved the levels that they really ought to achieve. And they're feeling molly over, and they're feeling that they're full of averas, and they come to the Beis HaMikdash and they see the Tanoim and they see the Tzaddikim of the generation, and they were leading they were juggling with the fire torches and they were leading the dancing, and they see all these Tzaddikim, they're standing on the side, all the people thinking to themselves, what right do I have to rejoice over here together with all these Tzaddikim? Who am I already? I'm not worthy of joining in with all these celebrations to serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu in this way. Says Hillel, you know something, you're right. You're not worthy. But it's not only you who are not worthy. I'm not worthy. The Malachim are not worthy. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is so great. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is so big that nobody is worthy. And it's not that we're worthy or not worthy. It's because HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves us as His children, more than the Malachim. He loves us as His children. And every mitzvah that we do, no matter who we are, no matter what we look like, no matter where we come from, for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, every mitzvah we do, that is something special. That's something which means a lot to Him. So said Hillel, who was a paradigm of humility, he was the one who was the most humble of people, he said to everyone, "Man, I can. If I, Hillel, am here, who am I? I'm unworthy Hillel. Just like you, I have no right to be rejoicing over here in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu because I'm also unworthy, just like you." There's no difference between the regular layman and Hillel HaZaken, who is the leader of Klal Yisrael. Hillel was saying, "Imani kan, if I'm here, then HaKol kan. Everybody else has a right to be here. Vim ein ani kan, and if I do not have a right to be here, then mi kan. Who does have a right to be here? No one's allowed to be here because the Rebbein Shalom is not looking about how worthy we are and how not worthy we are." This is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants. He wants us on Sukkot to encircle all of Klal Yisrael. And in fact, when we take the Arba Minim, it's well known, Chazal, on the Farsh Arba Minim, represent four types of Yidden. You have the Esrog, which has a smell and a taste, which represents somebody who has Torah and Masim Tovim. You have the Hadassim, which just have a smell, the smell of good deeds without the Torah. You have the Lulav, which has a taste, but without the Masim Tovim. And you have the Arava, which has neither, a Yid who has absolutely nothing, and on the surface of things looks like he's nothing, he has no Torah and no Masim Tovim. On Sukkot, we bring all the Yidden together, and with that we do the Nanuim, and we Amaram is HaKadosh Baruch Hu is everywhere, and that is how we serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Only can we serve HaKadosh Baruch Hu when we have all of Klal Yisrael together, when we're accepting of all of Klal Yisrael together. And I apologize if I'm bringing up something which is close to the hearts of many, but it's important when we go into Yom Tov to look as a Kehillah around us. And Baruch Hashem, most people don't have to see on a regular basis what's going on around us, the pain and the suffering. But everyone in their life knows somebody who is suffering. And we know, if we look on the streets, that the amount of children we see who are looking less and less like we may have looked when we were younger, we see that we find it difficult to relate to these children out there, difficult to relate to the families out there. When there's physical suffering, when there's physical illness, lo aleinu, we can relate to it and we can understand and we feel that this is not brought on by the child, this is not brought on by the person, and therefore we can have rachmanus. But when we look at other children, we look at children who it seems on the surface of things, like an arava, on the surface of things, the arava was actually the one from the Arba Minim, which was what we used for the Ishanus, was in the Beis HaMikdash, they went around the Mizbeach with the arava. When it looks on the surface of things, you have somebody who has not mitzvahs and not ma'asim tovim. It looks like we have children out there who don't have mitzvahs and ma'asim tovim. Then they have to be encircled with us when we come into Yom Tov, when we come into the Yom Tov of Sukkot. So Moshe Lamad Avadoma, to a king who wants to give reward to all his loyal servants. And there's one servant that he has is a nanny who's been looking after his children, who's been looking after his princes since he had his first child, and now she's looking after his last child. And they come in front of the Ribbono Shel Olam, they come in front of the king, and they want to get the reward, and everyone's waiting to see what reward is this nanny going to get for looking after the king's princes for so many years. And the line moves forward, and then the king spots the nanny, and he says to the nanny, "What you do, if you're over here, who's looking after my children? Did you bring my child with you? Who's looking after my children if you're over here?" And so too, when we come in front of the Ribbono Shel Olam, and we say to the Ribbono Shel Olam, "Here, Zman Simchaseinu, we're rejoicing as Hillel did in the Simchas Beis HaShe'evim, Anikan HaKolkan." And we take the four minim, representing all the Yidden, just like we can't be Yotze the Arba Minim, if we're missing one of those minim. If we're missing the Arava, we're missing the Esrog, we're missing the Adas or the Lulav, we can't be Yotza. So too, if we come before the Ribbono Shel Olam, and the Ribbono Shel Olam looks at us, and we haven't given the support to those parents and those children who are around us, who might not be able to make it to shul, because they have to worry about what's going to be with their children. If we haven't given the support to those children, who don't feel comfortable necessarily to come to shul, then Chalila, we could be missing one of those Arba Minim, and a Kaddish Baruch Hu might be asking us, Chalila, what's happened to that one of the minim that we're missing?
Amen. Amen. Beautiful friends. This is a beautiful friend of yours.